across America. Live, this is Point of View. And now, Kirby Anderson.
Thank you for joining me as we've been announcing. Joel Rosenberg in studio with us today. New book out, The Kremlin Conspiracy, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But this is one of those days where so many events in the news will certainly focus our time and attention. It turns out that Rex Tillerson is no longer Secretary of State. He found out by looking at Twitter. That's probably the best way to let someone go, and actually we'll talk about the significance of that. But more importantly, we have, of course, in studio somebody that knows Mike Pompeo. As a matter of fact, if you go to joelrosenberg.com to his blog, you'll see a picture of the two of them right there, and they've known each other for some time. And even USA Today saying Mike Pompeo has the opportunity to shake up Russia, China policy, and reform the State Department. So we have lots to talk about. Joel Rosenberg, a good friend of ours, a New York Times bestselling author, all sorts of novels, nonfiction books, individual that we just value so much in terms of being our eyes and ears in Israel. And last time you and I were together, we were at Word of Life.
That was wonderful, up there in the beautiful Adirondack Mountains, where I grew up. I spent a lot of my childhood in those mountains, and that was fun to teach the scriptures. Not quite side by side, but we got to two different sessions.
If you ever go to Word of Life, you're in one venue, I'm in another, and then we see each other on the as we go by.
Right.
And if it weren't for dinners, we would never have seen each other.
But it was a wonderful time.
It was really great to meet your family and everything as well. Well, you've got all sorts of comments, I know, because you've known Mike Pompeo since the time he was in Congress. He's been the CIA director. And here's a man that really has had the ear of the president. Is that fair?
He has. Look, any time that a reader of my political thrillers gets elevated to the vice presidency, Mike Pence, I just saw him last week. He's like, hey, I was at NRB, and he says, he gave me a hug, and he said, where's my new, the copy of your new book? So, Pompeo, I'm encouraged. This is an excellent decision by President Trump,
right,
who is clearly finding his way in terms of building a team that he feels comfortable with, that he trusts, and that, you know, bring the level of experience that he does not have in foreign and national security policy, as well as just running a government. Pompeo is interesting because he fits Trump's approach of the type of person he likes. He likes generals and military guys. Now, Pompeo was never a general, but he was first in his class at West Point.
Right.
He served as an officer in the United States Army. He got a law degree from Harvard. And he served on the House Intelligence Committee for years, so he knows the intelligence community. He understands the intersection between Congress, the administration, the intelligence services, and diplomacy. And he's smart. I mean, he's funny, and he's got the type of personality that is connected well with the president. Now, the CIA director does not usually brief the president every day in what's known as the presidential daily brief, where you have between a half hour or an hour to walk the president through the most important things that the intelligence community needs the president to know.
It's usually a staffer that does
exactly
that, right?
But President Trump specifically chose Mike Pompeo to give that briefing
that
to him almost every single day for the last 13-14 months. This has built a very good relationship. You know, the president doesn't tolerate people around him if he doesn't like them and trust them. I mean, just, you know, you can see it.
Yeah.
You find out one day you're gone. And I don't know that any cabinet official in the Trump administration has spent more time with the president than Mike Pompeo. And this is one of the reasons that it's important, because they trust each other. But the other reason is because if you're the Secretary of State, world leaders have to know that you have the ear and the confidence of the president, and you really understand what his policies are and where he's heading. It was clear from the beginning that Rex Tillerson did not have that relationship, didn't build that relationship for whatever reason. I think he's a good man. There's no evidence that he's not an honorable person. He's not a kind person, a smart person. He was a tremendous ExxonMobil CEO. But that doesn't necessarily translate into being the nation's lead diplomat, especially for a president who is so new to it and unconventional, to say the least. And, you know, often Tillerson would say something and it was completely off message from what the president right. wanted. So I think this is going to be an excellent change. I wish Tillerson well. I don't know him personally. I think Mike Pompeo is going to come in, and everybody in the world is going to know when this guy speaks, he's speaking for the president. He's also speaking to the president.
Right.
The president's listening to his counsel. But one other thing, you and I were talking about it before we went on air. The CIA director is not allowed by law
That's true.
To provide policy mm-hmm. guidance to
That's
the
right. mm-hmm.
president. He is supposed to...
just give the intelligence.
Yeah, bring it. Well, you know, just the facts, ma'am.
Right. Yeah.
You know, in the old Joe Dragnet. Friday yeah. Dragnet movie.
Yeah.
What are the facts that we know from intelligence gathering, and what do they mean? Or what might they mean? That's as far as you can go. This now allows Pompeo at state to not only speak into, but actually craft Russia policy, because he's tough on Russia. So I say thank God, because I don't think the president has been tough enough. We can talk about that later.
I know.
North Korea policy, as we head into these high-stakes negotiations with the leader of North Korea. Iran, not negotiations, but what do we do with the Iran nuclear deal that's so disastrous? Tillerson was for keeping it. The president is not.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a source of contention. And then, of course, the Arab-Israeli tensions and the possibility, right. hopefully someday, for peace. So these are big issues at a highly volatile season in global affairs, among the most dangerous and volatile as any time in the post-World War II environment. So I think it's a great decision by the president.
You know, there were all sorts of rumors that Rex Tillerson was on the way out, but one of the ones that was a real warning flag to me is, you might remember about a week ago, Rex Tillerson says, there are no negotiations with North Korea. We're not talking to North Korea. And the next day, South Korea says, oh, I think North Korea leader wants to sit down with your leader. And I thought, how could you be that far out of the loop and not know
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I don't know how you could be. But look, the thing that was the kiss of death, though, wasn't all the disconnect. It was that he called the president a moron.
That too.
Now, how he didn't get fired that day, I don't know. I mean, he never denied it, which it was actually painful to watch him not deny it.
Yeah.
He said, I don't want to get into that. That's old news. I'm not going to get into that petty. If you didn't say it, you'd just say, that's ridiculous. I didn't do it. So we all know he did it. And it was time to move on.
You know, with Mike Pompeo, again, just the whole idea of China policy as well, Russia. Let's talk about that after we get back from the break, because it leads obviously into the Kremlin conspiracy. This is a president, I think I could be fair in saying, that does not hold back in criticizing anybody, even some people that don't deserve to be criticized. But there's one individual that never seems to get criticized, and that's Vladimir Putin, right?
So that's true.
This
he's been radio silent on Putin, and that needs to change.
Yes, and of course you have an election coming up, so we'll talk about that as well. And while we're talking about CIA directors, one other former director of the CIA, Porter Goss, endorses this. James Woolsey, I think, endorses that. And we just mentioned Michael Pompeo. Do you know everybody at the CIA or just all the
leaders? I I'm honored to know these three, and they've been very friendly and very helpful. They don't give me enough information. They never give me classified information.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Joel Rosenberg in studio. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Privileged to have Joel Rosenberg in studio today. And by the way, if you'd like to watch, feel free to go online, or you can go to Facebook Live, a number of different places you can watch this. Later, of course, the podcast of this will be available if you'd like to listen to it again or send it to others. And of course, you can go to our YouTube channel to watch it. And if you have not seen it, this is the new book just out, The Kremlin Conspiracy by Joel Rosenberg. And since we were talking about Russia for just a minute, let's mention your book. But a little bit later, I want to get into the fact that we almost have the Mideast peace plan nearly finished, says the New York Times. Is it dead on arrival? I think I know what your answer is going to be on that one. And then one that I thought was kind of interesting, Ivanka has a framed copy of her father's Jerusalem speech in her office. So, and of course, we haven't had you in studio to talk about moving the capital to Jerusalem. Sorry, it's been the capital, but moving the embassy there is just all sorts of other topics. But while we're on Russia for just a minute, Fascinating story. Marcus Riker finds himself, first of all, defending the president, but then wondering if he's going to have to intervene in Russian politics. I don't want to give too much away because it's a fictional book, but give us the background, because if nothing else, it just reminds us that Russia's been in the news. So I wasn't surprised to see that your new book is on Russia.
Well, as you know, Kirby, I've mostly written my political thrillers, these novels over the years, about challenges in the Middle East,
right.
Worst case scenarios that are coming out of radical Islamism or apocalyptic Islamism. But I needed to reshuffle the deck. I needed to just professionally, I can't write about the Middle East every single book. I need to just look for other enemies where evil is rising someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
And my eye kept being drawn to Vladimir Putin. So I decided to write a political thriller, The Kremlin Conspiracy, which you're right, just came out last week. My main Russian dictator is Alexander Luganov. He's not Putin, but he's Putin-esque. Okay,
yes.
But he's rising to power, and the premise is that while a new American president, new to the presidency, new to foreign policy, has his eye on North Korea and Iran, that the Russian president is planning a lightning-fast grab of one, two, or maybe three of the Baltic states. These are NATO allies right on the border of Russia. Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania.
Right.
Now you think, why would he care? Why would you do that? There's no oil or gas there. There's no big natural resources. Well, first of all, the Russian dictator in the novel, the Kremlin Conspiracy, what he wants is to completely undermine the NATO alliance.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to prove that he's the world leader and everyone needs to kiss his ring. So what he thinks to do is if he thinks in 96 hours he could send 100,000 troops racing across the border and grab one or more of these Baltic states. Yes, they are under NATO protection, what's known as Article 5,
right,
which is the mutual defense pact. If one country is attacked, every country NATO considers itself under attack and they all come to the rescue. That's the premise. It's only been tested one time, when the United States was attacked on September 11th, 2001, and NATO did kick in and help us fight al-Qaeda and the Taliban in Afghanistan. Otherwise, it's been incredibly successful in not having to fight.
Right.
By being unified, the Soviet Union didn't invade. But the gamble that this Russian dictator in the Kremlin conspiracy is making is, if I go grab one or more of those countries, is the United States of America, is the rest of NATO, are they really going to go to war with Russia? Are they going to risk nuclear war to rescue some country that most Americans can't find on a map? And his gamble is, the answer is no, they're not going to do it. If I can grab it, they will not come and rescue it. And if they don't, the theory is that's the end of NATO. You can't have a NATO alliance if one or more countries get invaded and nobody comes to their rescue. Nobody right. believes you anymore. And that's where Marcus Riker shows up.
Yes.
Former Marine, former U.S. Secret Service agent, some personal tragedies in his life that I won't go into on the air. But he finds himself, it was a fiction, but he finds himself in Moscow on private business.
Mm-hmm.
And he just happens to be at the vortex of the storm when all hell breaks loose and at the most dangerous moment in U.S.-Russian relations. And boy, I had a lot of fun writing this novel. I hope people enjoy reading it, but I enjoy just doing something different. And it was fun to do the research on it. I've been to Russia several times. My family escaped out of Russia.
That's what I was going to say. Your family background, ultimately. Yeah.
On my father's side, they were Orthodox Jews
mm-hmm.
who escaped in 1906 when the last czar was in power, Tsar Nicholas II, fomenting just horrific anti-Semitic attacks known as the pogroms. Leading to the death of 60,000 Jewish people, the rape, the beating, the torture of tens of thousands of more Jews, burning their houses, stealing their property. So our family was able to escape. They got to America. This is where we found freedom. This is where we found Christ, here in the United States. So, but my eye, I think, in my DNA, in my history, my personal interest has always been on Russia, then the Soviet Union. I was there in 1986 for a month when it was still the Soviet Union, the evil mm-hmm. empire, smuggling in Bibles, sharing the gospel with college students there. It was fascinating. I mean, I just thought, James Bond for Jesus. I mean, it was just the coolest opportunity. But then I got to go back about 10 years ago when Putin was in power, took my father. He had never been. And I was doing research for a book back in that time. But I hadn't returned to the topic in a while. And I had the opportunity to sit down with, I had dinner with the former Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper.
Great friend
of the United States.
Sure. Yes.
Great friend of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But a NATO leader, mm-hmm. a NATO leader who had stared down Putin, been in the room with him, been in the NATO meetings. And I said, I really want to meet a NATO leader and spend time as I do research for a book like this. And we had 3 hours of a private dinner, just one-on-one, built a friendship out of that. And then other former CIA directors that I know who've been helpful on a book mm-hmm. like this, a former chief economic advisor to Vladimir Putin. So again, it's not Putin, but I wanted to craft somebody who, again, was Putin-esque. Because I believe, personally, shifting away from the Kremlin conspiracy to real life, I believe Vladimir Putin is the most dangerous
right.
leader on the planet right now. And
you wouldn't know that if you listened to the Trump administration.
Well, look.
Or even the Obama administration.
Well, Obama was terrible on the Russia issue.
Yeah.
Complete softness, weakness. Vladimir Lenin once said, probe with bayonets.
Yeah.
If you find mush, push. If you find steel, stop. In the Obama years, Putin was probing and he found mush. And he invaded
right.
country after country after country.
Yeah.
Dissidents are dying. You know, the press was being shut down. He was consolidating power. Now, President Trump, to his credit, his policies have been good, mostly. He's increasing U.S. defense spending. He's pushing NATO to spend more on their own defense, and they're doing it.
Right.
He has put tremendously good people around him, as we've been discussing. Mike Pence at VP, Nikki Haley at UN, Mike Pompeo at CIA and now State, Jim Mattis. Jim Mattis, the four-star general.
You start with a quote from Jim Mattis.
Exactly.
I love that.
Look, you would not, if you're soft on Putin, there's no reason to put the former supreme leader of commander of NATO as your defense secretary. It doesn't fit. I don't see the criminal conspiracy here. When I write Kremlin conspiracy, that's not what I mean.
Yeah.
So policy and personnel-wise, the president has done well. The problem that Mr. Trump has is he's radio silent
yes.
on the issue of Putin. He's tougher on Jeff Sessions than he is on the worst dictator on the planet. And I don't understand it. I don't pretend to understand. I'm trying to figure it out. But this president needs to show steel. He needs to be tough. He needs to lay out a comprehensive strategy to deal with Russia, deal with Putin, counter the Putin threat. So he gets a B- at the moment. Policy good, personnel good, but when you're not showing leadership, that's a problem. And counter one other thing, Kirby, contrast what he's doing with North Korea.
Oh, yes.
Trump is calling the leader Rocket Man, right? Yeah. He's constantly tweeting aggressively to deal with this threat. He's laying out speeches where he talks about the threat. He sends Pence and Mattis and all these others over to the region. He's flying U.S. Nuclear-armed aircraft over the Korean Peninsula. He's strengthening these alliances in the region. He's deploying naval forces. And it's gotten the attention of the North Korean leader. So he's not doing any of that with Putin. Why not?
That's a good question. I wish we had an answer, but maybe Mike Pompeo is a step in the right direction.
He is. He definitely is.
Even USA Today suggests that might be a possibility. We're going to take a break, and let me just suggest that as we go to the break, this would be a good time for you to go to our website, pointofview.net. We have a link to joerosenberg.com, or you can go there directly. He's posted a blog today about some of the switches in policy and personnel. Of course, all the information about this book and all of his other books are available there as well. We'll continue our conversation with Joel Rosenberg right after these important messages.
You are listening to Point of View. The opinions expressed on Point of View do not necessarily reflect the views of the management or staff of this station. And now, here again,
is Kirby Anderson.
In studio with us, Joe Rosenberg, his new book out, The Kremlin Conspiracy. You should be able to find it in your local bookstore, published by Tyndale, a real page turner, and it will help you understand some of the events in the news. Obviously, it's fiction, but it's thinly veiled in some places. It reads a lot like what you see in the newspapers every day. So I think you will enjoy that. And again, just kind of a who's who of individuals that have endorsed it. I mentioned Porter Gosch just a minute ago, Brigadier General Tata. As a matter of fact, we were even talking about the fact that the book starts with a rather arresting quote from James Mattis. You got to love a guy that's known as, you know, Mad Dog, okay? But yeah. Be polite, be professional, but have a plan to kill everybody you meet. That's how you start that book. And then you also have Winston Churchill quote. Let's just for a minute mention that people can find these books and others, as well as lots of other great resources, at joelrosenberg.com. I think I'd be remiss if I did not mention that some people might want to come to Israel this summer, because you have put together an event that is really exciting.
Well, thank you. Yes, I hope people will be interested. We've got, in fact, we're almost filled with the Joshua Fund tour. But we've got what's called an Epicenter Prayer Summit. Mm-hmm. The summit is July 11th and 12th. Ann Graham Lotz, the wonderful Bible teacher, daughter of the late Billy Graham. What a loss. But we have her, and she's fabulous and a good close friend. She'll be one of the keynotes. Pastor Ronnie Floyd, mm-hmm. From Northwest Arkansas. I was just at his church preaching this weekend and spent the weekend with he and his wife and team. He's the former president of the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. He'll also be a keynote, and myself. But we're just there, in a sense, to frame sort of theologically, biblically, the importance of prayer and look at it from a couple different angles. But in between our messages, I think, are the real highlights. Israeli and Palestinian pastors and ministry leaders will be sharing. When we say pray for the peace of Jerusalem, yeah, we do mean geopolitical peace. We also mostly want the gospel to be preached to everybody in the region. But after that, a lot of us say, well, how do I pray for the peace of Jerusalem? What specifically do I pray? And that's because we don't know really what's happening in the region. So when you hear from Israeli pastors, Palestinian pastors, when you see the unity between Israeli, Jewish, and Palestinian Arab believers, you're not seeing that on the geopolitical stage. But in Christ, we are one. Doesn't mean we agree on everything, but I think it's important, and that's what the summit will be about. And I think so that's wonderful, and there are still seats available on the Joshua Fund's tour, but Ann is bringing a tour, Ronnie's bringing a tour, and a number of other organizations all converging for that Epicenter Prayer Summit. People can learn more about it at joshuafund.com.
And again, you can go to joelrosenberg.com, and there's a link to
there
Joshua
is.
Fund.
That's true. That might be easier way.
So we have both the links there as well. And so please
If I can add just one thing, sorry, I was just thinking some of your listeners may not know what the Joshua Fund is. So my wife and I founded the Joshua Fund as a nonprofit ministry 12 years ago. The goal was to educate and mobilize Christians to bless Israel and her neighbors. So we work in Israel, in the Palestinian territories, and in five Arab countries: Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, Egypt, and Iraq. And I think of it like a venture capital firm. Essentially, we are investing in small but promising and growing congregations and ministries to help them reach more people, disciple more people, plant more churches, provide humanitarian relief to Syrian refugees, Iraqi refugees, Holocaust survivors. So it's got an evangelistic discipleship component, a pastoral encouragement component, humanitarian relief, and then the education of the church. What is God's heart for both Jews and Arabs? We don't believe that the Bible is either or, although some evangelicals are. We're not. We believe God loves both and that this is a ministry that invests in the future of the church on both sides.
And again, Joshua Fund, and you can find that at joelrosenberg.com or go directly to that. And while we're talking about Israel, I guess it's about time. We have not had you in studio until now to talk about moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Now, there was a time when we had some embassies in Jerusalem, and of course we know that the United Nations actually changed that because there was so much pressure. And you know as well as I do that almost every president, all the way back, Bill Clinton talked about this, George W. Bush talked about this, Barack Obama talked about this, Donald Trump talked about it. But he decided to do it. And so they've always talked about it. But what are the possible implications of moving the American embassy to Jerusalem?
Well, first, let's take a few pieces at a time. One, of course, Israelis are ecstatic about this.
Yes.
Because Israel is the only country on the planet that the American embassy isn't in the declared capital, which is unusual. It's unusual given that the U.S. embassy is in the capital of all of our enemies.
Yeah.
that we have relationship with. Why not in one of our best friends?
Yes.
So Israelis are thrilled. I mean, we've been going on without it for 70 years, so it's not like it's caused damage, but it does send a message that Jerusalem's sort of up for grabs. Now, the embassy's actually being moved to West Jerusalem, and it's not, and so the president signaled that the boundaries of Jerusalem were still open for negotiation.
Mm.
Now, the Palestinians have reacted very negatively, and they don't want to negotiate. So that's going to be an issue. They could negotiate it, but so far they have not. Now, my challenge is, as an evangelical, as somebody who believes that Jerusalem is the Jewish capital, I'm supportive of the president's decision. But I also love my Palestinian Christian friends, and they struggle with this. This feels to them like it makes their life more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
They're evangelical Palestinians, and now they're being tagged with this evangelical support for President Trump's very controversial decision, and it makes it difficult for them to be a witness in their community because Muslims aren't happy about this. And Jordanian Christians, Egyptian Christians, I've spent time with all their leaders in the last few months, they're not happy about it either. So it's difficult if you love both sides.
Yeah.
It's one of these things that, you know, the Bible doesn't say where an embassy should be.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to be ambassadors for Christ, which means loving both sides. So it just makes it a little bit more complicated. And people aren't going to always agree, but we have to do it lovingly and respectfully, having that conversation. Overall, I think it's a positive. Because I hope what it does is it brings the Palestinians and the Israelis back to the table. In the end, we want a negotiated conclusion to this thing. I don't think you're going to have lasting peace if you don't have that. But we haven't seen real negotiations in quite some time. So maybe this in some way will kickstart them. That's certainly the president's theory.
Again, New York Times says the Mideast peace process and peace plan is nearly finished. Is it dead on arrival? And part of the difficulty, Joel, as you have talked about so well on this program before, is you have to have honest brokers coming to the table. And when one side wants the other side to be pushed into the sea, makes it a little difficult to come up with any kind of resolution, doesn't it?
Well, yes. Now, you sit down with your Palestinian friends, Christian or Muslim, and they will say, no, we've got a list of all the things that the Israelis have done to make it so that these negotiations have gotten derailed. So both sides have their case, their narrative. But the bottom line is Israel has a country and is a growing and a thriving country after 70 years. The Palestinians have had, at the leadership level, an extremely difficult time of getting to what they could say yes to.
Mm-hmm.
And Palestinians are suffering. Some of that is Israel's fault, but not all of it. And you look at Gaza. Israel withdrew from the Gaza Strip in 2005. It was a highly controversial move when Ariel Sharon, then Israeli prime minister, did it. But there's not a single Israeli citizen there. There's not a single Israeli soldier in Gaza. They've got beachfront property. They've got natural gas, trillions of gallons of natural gas right off the coast. They've got smart people, but they've turned it into a hellhole. I mean, I'm sorry. Hamas took over. People voted for Hamas, and they started firing rockets at Israel, and it's not clear why. Israel withdrew. We're not occupying a single inch of Gaza, and yet it's the worst-case scenario. So the people there are suffering horribly because Israel has to respond. The infrastructure is destroyed. Hamas keeps taking billions of dollars in international aid, and they build terror tunnels so they can sneak under our territory, pop up, and kill us. It's a disaster, and we need to find a way, prayerfully, miraculously get to a point where things would just quiet down and people could live their lives.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll finish off our conversation today with Joel Rosenberg. And again, if you have just joined us, I've been talking about his new book. It's just out, The Kremlin Conspiracy. It's published by Tyndale. You can certainly find it in your local bookstore, but also we have a link to his website in which you can find out about many other books. And I certainly would commend to you some of those, for example, Epicenter, Inside the Revolution, and many other nonfiction books, as well as his thrillers. We'll take a break. Be back right after this.
Now, back to Point of View, your listener-supported source for truth.
Back for a few more minutes in studio with us today, Joel Rosenberg, the new book out, The Kremlin Conspiracy. And I thought we might just mention that there are elections taking place in Russia. Matter of fact, we're going to be having elections here in the United States. But that is striking because now you sort of have China, leader for life. You're wondering, eventually, you're just going to have Putin, leader for life.
And, absolutely. I would almost guarantee that he – look, he wants to be a czar.
Yes.
He doesn't want to run every 6 years. That's their system. No, I think he is more likely to say, if the Chinese can do it,
they can do
the
it.
Russians can do it. So
what about this? How do we think about Russia? This sort of gets back to paying attention to not only who the president is right now, but we have 35 Senate races, 435 races for the House of Representatives. I'd like to know where my representative stands on Russia and whether or not they'd back other kinds of sanctions or actions that the president might take.
I think that Russia is going to be a key issue in the 2018 midterm elections, Kirby. And I think that because, first of all the intelligence chiefs, including Pompeo, just testified that the Russians did meddle. They actively tried to subvert our elections in 2016. They were not successful,
yes,
but they did try, and they're going to try again,
I think so.
The intelligence chief said. Russia's a player because they're forcing themselves into be a player, number one. Number two, we just did a poll that we released on the eve of the release of the novel, The Kremlin Conspiracy. It was a national poll, and we found that 72% of Americans – see Vladimir Putin as a, quote, clear and present danger,
yes,
unquote,
mm-hmm,
to the national security of the United States and our allies. What issue can you think of that 3 out of 4 Americans agree on almost anything right mm-hmm now? So the fact that Putin is galvanizing a unified fear and concern is important, because we also asked, one of the questions in the poll was, and you can find this poll at joelrosenberg.com on
right
my blog. But
mm-hmm,
but we asked, has President Trump convinced you that he understands the threat fully and that he's taking every action that he can to counter the Russian threat effectively? Or has he not yet convinced you and you're concerned about his relationship with Putin and you want him to do much more? So we kind of gave people two very different options. 52% of Americans said that President Trump has not yet convinced them that he gets it and that he's doing enough to stop it.
Right.
That's pretty striking, because it means that Republicans also see that, not just Democrats, and independents particularly. So I think it's going to be an issue that every member of the House and those who are running in the Senate are going to have a clearly defined policy towards Putin and Russia, and the president's going to have one too.
Yes. Well, while you're talking about elections, we are in the midst of elections right now, and those are going to be important. A primary took place in Texas, one in Pennsylvania today, and all sorts of others playing out in a general election. And when you look back even a year or two ago, I think it'd be fair to say that of the 17 Republican candidates, Donald Trump was 18th on your list, right?
You know, mine, yes. I was a never Trumper till the Thursday before the election. And
so what do you
living
think
in Israel,
now?
We were, you know, had to make a decision. And look, I ultimately voted for President Trump reluctantly. I'm candid about it.
Yes.
I looked at his past, and I wasn't convinced that he was a conservative or that he would do the things that he promised. However, I did see him choose Mike Pence, who's both a personal friend, and he and his wife are fans of the novels. And I think my wife did say at one point, you really going to vote against a ticket where one of the members is a fan of your novels? I mean, is that your plan? I thought, all right, well, maybe not.
That's a great line.
But also, I knew what Hillary Clinton would do, and I knew that I couldn't go there.
Yes.
And and candidate Trump had said, I will pick federal judges that are conservative, strict constructionists. I will pick Supreme Court justices from this specific list, and the list was good. He said he would be pro-Israel. He said he would increase defense spending. He said he would cut taxes. I wasn't sure whether I could believe him. But I will tell you a little over a year in, Kirby, that I have been struck by how much better the president has done than I was fearful that he would. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has kept his word in many areas. And his personnel is mostly good. Those that have not been good choices tend to implode.
Yeah.
And get kicked out, and they tend to get replaced, not always, but tend to get replaced by people that are better, more professional, more serious. Look, the process is exhausting to watch in Washington,
oh, yes.
And but the results have been very, very positive. There are areas that still bother me. I mean, obviously, the economy is doing great. The stock market's doing great. Jobs are booming. Even in Hispanic unemployment is lowest ever. African-American unemployment, lowest ever. It's extraordinary. Wealth is growing. Wages are rising. That's what he said he would do. And he is a business guy. He's doing it. So he gets a lot of credit. He's been great on Israel. He's been great on rebuilding relationship with the Sunni Arab world, Egypt, Jordan, the Saudis, the Emirates. That's positive, too. And, of course, he's doing well in Asia. Not so good with Russia yet, but I think that can change, and I pray that it does. There are areas. I don't like the tweets.
No, for sure.
I don't like how people get.
I mean, anybody that just thinks they're wonderful.
I don't like how critical he is. It's a little snarky for my taste. from a president.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of the way people get dismissed from the administration, they're an East German. Yeah. Who just disappears in the dead of night? Back in the Soviet
today.
Era. Yeah, I mean, look, Tillerson's he's a Texan, so I should be particularly respectful of him here. But I am. I like him. I don't know him, but I think he's a good man. He left the best job in business to come help the president. The president wasn't pleased. Okay, but I think he deserves a phone call to say, listen, we disagree on some things. I appreciate your service. In a few hours, I'm gonna make an announcement. I just think that's a decent thing to do.
Right.
These are people, you know, he took a big pay cut to do this job. I know Trump did too. And then there's some personal stuff. I mean, I don't know what the truth is about Stormy Daniels and these things, but you know, I pray for his family. I pray for him. If any of that's true, it's disappointing.
Yes.
And as an evangelical, you know, I was critical of President Bill Clinton when he kind of went there, and I'm not comfortable with this. I couldn't possibly be. But the question is, if he's reconciled with his family, and he gets through his legal problems, I'm not sure it's affecting his job performance. But I can't entirely separate those two things.
Of course. And again, as evangelicals, I don't think we should. So
I don't think so.
First of all, let me just before run out of time here, mention that again, joelrosenberg.com. The Joshua Fund is a link there, the books and the DVDs. But again, let me just mention the book out, The Kremlin Conspiracy. And again, Tyndale, look for it in your local bookstore. And I know that you've got all sorts of other novels planned, but this one is a little bit different than the other ones from the Middle East. So I really appreciate you taking the time to read it, research it, then write it, and then spend some time with us.
I did
today.
Read it, too. Yes. That's true.
Yes. And then most importantly, spend an hour with us today here on the program.
Well, it's been an honor, as always. And to do it in studio is a special blessing. It's good to be in Dallas and good to be with you, Kirby.
Well, again, thank you. And again, speaking of reading, it is worth your read, and all of these books are. A number of novels over the years, I think more than a dozen, five different nonfiction books. And if you find yourself saying, I need to learn a little bit more, we have a link to joelrosenberg.com. And you certainly want to get some of the nonfiction books like Inside the Revolution and Epicenter. And don't forget, there's that Epicenter conference taking place in Jerusalem. So it's going to be. And I'd love you to come back and give us a report about that.
That's I would enjoy that. Thank you.
A great opportunity. Need to take a break. We've got a lot more to cover, but that is the hour with Joel Rosenberg. So go to our website, pointofview.net, if you'd like some more information. We'll be back right after this.